Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. This is the podcast where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Merry Christmas to everybody out there. I hope you're having a fantastic day. If you're listening to this after Christmas, then I'd still hope you're having a fantastic day. But we have a special treat for you. I am here with my wife, Sarah.
Hello.
Welcoming her back to the show. It's been a while. What was the last thing we did together?
No idea.
I can't remember either. Maybe Hamilton? In July?
I don't know.
We did Brick.
That was earlier.
This entire year has just disappeared into a black hole. It's very hard to perceive time or...
I think it is Hamilton.
I think so.
That was summer.
If we're wrong, yeah, that was 4th of July. So if we're wrong, just feel free to correct us. But we've made it to the end of the year. We hope you're staying safe and healthy and happy. And speaking of healthy and happy, there are a ton of healthy and happy people over on the Nerd Party Network. That is the whole network of podcasts that includes Missing Frames. I said network twice. I'm going to call it a family of podcasts. It's a family of podcasts that Missing Frames is a part of. It is devoted to all kinds of things, entertainment, movies, television, books, and more. Check it out at thenerdparty.com. Make sure you're following the Nerd Party at Join Nerd Party on Twitter, like the Facebook page and the Instagram page. It's just the Nerd Party. But now let's get a little more festive. It doesn't get much more festive than plugging the Nerd Party, but we are going to be continuing our Christmas movie watch. We just did, and by we, I mean me, I just did Black Christmas with John Mills and Richie Pepio, which is an excellent, excellent horror Christmas movie directed by Bob Clark, who also did
A Christmas Story.
You got it. So the two Christmas movies he made, one's a terrifying horror thriller and the other one is a standard Christmas movie.
I love that so much.
It's great. We should watch Black Christmas someday. It's a fantastic film. But now we're going to go on the opposite side of the color spectrum and do White Christmas.
Yes.
Another film that I haven't seen, but Sarah, you're a big fan of White Christmas. I actually bought this for you as a Christmas present.
And I haven't watched it since.
Yes, and I think this was one of the first gifts I got you.
Yeah, so 2012 maybe?
And it should prove my love for you because as you well know, but our listeners might not, I consider glitter to be one of my greatest enemies on the face of the planet. And the White Christmas Blu-ray, I don't know which edition it is, so I can't reference it specifically, but there was an edition, an anniversary edition, that's just covered
very sparkly
in glitter.
Yeah.
And I got it for you anyway, despite my sheer hatred of glitter. So that should have given you a sign that we were meant to be together.
Yeah.
But White Christmas, I know this is one of my mom's favorite movies.
How did you miss this?
Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
But it's weird. This is something that I would have expected my mom to show me.
Yeah.
Because she seemed to really love it.
And it's family friendly.
It's so family friendly. Yeah, and I remember seeing it around the house constantly. Mm-hmm. It was on my mom's tape shelf, like her video shelf. So it was just something I was aware of as a kid. And that was the extent of my knowledge. I don't know why I never watched it. This was a period in my life where I was like, yeah, sure. I remember there's this movie called Switching Channels that stars Christopher Reeve. And I watched it because it was Christopher Reeve, but Superman. So it's a movie that I don't know that I'd recommend. I don't really remember it. But this was a period where I was just pulling movies off the shelf. So it I don't know why.
You just recognize Superman.
I don't know why, but I do know that White Christmas is one of, I want to say it's one of my mom's favorites. I feel like she talked about it a lot. I'm very, again, baffled why I never.
It's probably one of many mom's favorite movies.
Yes, that makes sense. But when did you first see it?
I couldn't pinpoint, you know, what year it was or how old I was. It's just a movie that has been on every Christmas my entire life growing up.
Yeah.
I think my childhood. It's just one of those films, you know, I think. TV, I think they played it all the time. It wasn't a marathon thing like A Christmas Story, but I feel like it's always on TV. I don't think I watched it through 100% until maybe high school.
Okay.
But I knew enough of it, you know, just certain songs, especially the soundtrack. I love the soundtrack. But it's just like a movie I have seen a million times, but probably only watched start to finish maybe five.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, it's just when it's on, you stop it and you watch 30 minutes of it.
I know this is also apparently the first film to use Vista Vision. So
the widescreen thing, right?
Yes. Yeah. So VistaVision, a widescreen process developed by Paramount that entailed using twice the surface area of standard 35 millimeter film. So basically it was just like, oh, it's
so
amazing.
Big deal.
It's even
yeah.
more immersive and incredible, and the colors are really popping. So that was a big deal. That was
the colors are very vivid in this
film. It was
film.
1954 is when it came out, and it was a huge hit. It had a budget of $2 million, and it made $30 million, so
nice.
Lots of people loved it.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby, who, again, I that's really all I know about the film, and I know it has a soundtrack.
And thanks for listening to the podcast.
Yes, I know it has a soundtrack because the Blu-ray I got you
came with
a soundtrack. Yeah. So
so all you know is from buying this Blu-ray for me 8 years ago.
Yes, but it's a musical.
Yes.
And I don't know. I couldn't tell you anything else about it. I can try to guess what it's about, though, because that's something we do here on Missing Frames.
Yeah, please. I want to hear this.
White Christmas. Just based on the photos I've seen, it seems very like in the realm of musicals that have like big extravagant sets. So something about it makes me feel like it's like a everyone works for a TV station. And they are worried because they have to get this program in time for Christmas, but they don't have the entertainers to do it. And they're desperate. And they're like, oh, our entertainers just canceled. We're going to have to put on the live performance ourselves. And nobody's ever done it before. You're looking, Sarah looks so upset and confused by my description that I know I'm wrong, but now I really want this to be a movie.
I would say
I like
you
this
got
idea a lot.
You got 1/10 of it right.
Okay, good. Well, that's
I would say
better
like
than being 100% wrong.
Putting on a performance, sure, that happens. The rest, no, not really.
Well, if you let me finish.
Oh, I apologize.
And there's a Christmas involved, and it's very white. Maybe there is an element of, it never snows here, and then it snows at the end of the movie.
You're getting warmer.
There we go. That's something that I absolutely think will happen. Mm-hmm. And,
we should do like a bingo.
Yes,
like,
that's actually, that would be fun if we could, we should, I don't know if it's on our budget to do,
our budget
to set up a bingo.
To set up a little, like, you're get right, a piece of paper
very,
and a crayon.
We are shoestring on Missing Frames. That is really all I know. And I enjoy musicals.
Yeah.
I am not one of those people who is like, I hate it. I love musicals, but I like musicals, I guess that, I don't know, that have a little bit of an edge to them. And edge is not the right word. I'm thinking like Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
Singing in the Rain is one of my favorite films of all time and my favorite musical. And Singing in the Rain is like self-aware and genuinely hilarious. So there's that almost like it's sort of poking fun at itself, but like in a sincere way. West Side Story has the like the gang stuff, which is great. I watched that with Trisha Arand, who is one of my favorite people on the planet. She is on the Lessons from the Screenplay podcast, or the channel, and then the Beyond the Screenplay podcast. And sometimes when musicals are just straight corny, I understand why people would dismiss the genre. So I have some concerns about this being that, just, you know, but I do like musicals. I'm not going to.
I'm curious to see what you think based on that statement, because I will say this is a very sugary sweet type of movie.
Okay.
But
it's
that being
movie.
Said,
yeah.
it doesn't, for me, it has never detracted from the sentiment and I don't know. It's just it's romance and it's singing and it's really good singing and it's really great dancing. So if you are even in it for the spectacle is awesome in my opinion.
The plot,
you could walk away for 20 minutes and come back and I think you know it's still
perfect.
Happening. Like just to be blunt, but it doesn't pull away from just it's pretty magical. I think
something else we've talked about is the lack of great Christmas movies. Christmas movies because with Halloween. there's no shortage
it's like
of 50. Like not only great horror movies, but some of those films in that genre are like the greatest films ever made.
Very elevated.
Christmas, there are some, like for sure, Die Hard, which is a Christmas movie. If you're here, you're gonna have to deal with
case.
That being the case. A Christmas Story, which is probably my favorite Christmas film.
Home Alone.
Home Alone, which is, you know...
It's silly,
you,
but it's
I think you had to
great.
Grow up with it, but I do think, you know, it's John Hughes and there is an
and
element
I would
of
put
fun
Planes,
to it.
Trains between
right
Thanksgiving
on the teetering on the edge.
But between Thanksgiving and Christmas, really.
But, like, can you think of... There are more that I haven't listed. I know people love Elf.
I love Elf. But you're not
I'm
the
not a huge
fan.
Well, don't tell them that because now they're really not going to want to listen to this. That's another story. We'll get back to that. but I... yeah, there are... I can't, it's slipping my mind right now, but like, I feel like
it's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah. It's amazing. The Charlie Brown Christmas.
Miracle on 34th.
The original Miracle on 34th Street is great. And so there is good stuff out there, but it does, Christmas movies, I think their problem is they give in so completely to the holiday season. The Christmas spirit tends to delve into like saccharine, sweet,
yes,
like
yeah.
very sappy, almost too, like you were saying, too much. And
yeah.
I think that can be an issue when you're going like too far in that direction. And Christmas just inspires that in general. So I think, but it's an interesting thing. And I think that's why maybe there aren't as many great Christmas movies out there.
Well, there's most of them are classics, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're not... I would say Elf is the more recent one that people latched onto,
yes.
probably.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of recent ones.
I think some people liked
ones,
The Grinch, though. Maybe. I did not.
Yeah.
But I don't know. What else is Christmas that's new?
There isn't much.
That's not,
Elf
like,
is the only
Hallmark
thing I can
or...
think of that people have really latched onto.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm always up for... whenever it's a really good one... It's always
send your
great.
Christmas recommendations.
Yeah, we need some Christmas movie recommendations.
We need to like fluff up our.
But maybe White Christmas will be part of the rotation now. Yeah. I feel like it will have to be regardless because you love it, even if I don't love it. But I think I'll.
I'm
going
to go back into older movies. Like Holiday Inn is one
yeah.
I haven't seen that I've always wanted to see.
The Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think I'll like White Christmas. I don't know if I'll love it. But I think I don't see myself not liking it or like being like, oh my God.
Are you familiar with Bing Crosby other than maybe his Christmas
songs? I know he sings stuff.
You know, what's her name? Rosemary Clooney is in this, and that's George Clooney's aunt.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's cool. And then Vera something. Oh, can't remember her name, but she's really wonderful.
Trusty old Wikipedia. Vera Ellen.
Yeah.
And she has a dash between her first and last name. It's
very,
like Mary Jane.
Very fancy.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm excited
see
if to you
watch
like
it.
This.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you know, goodbye forever.
Goodbye. All right, well, no pressure. So we're going to watch White Christmas and we'll be back to see if Sarah is going to divorce me.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Okay, we're back.
We're back.
We're back. I feel so conflicted about how to talk about this film.
Watching you watch this movie was painful for me.
Because
I just
clearly already know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we haven't talked about it, yes. But I felt the vibes coming off your body.
Yeah. I feel conflicted because it's like not a bad movie, but there was nothing remotely for me memorable or outstanding about it. So there was this part of me that was thinking the whole time, like, why is this so beloved? Is it something that people just would watch on TV as tradition? It clearly had a huge box office. It reached a huge audience. People loved it and they saw it. But personally, there was nothing about it that stood out to me as like particularly outstanding.
And that's our show.
That's our show. And it's not a bad movie. It just, like, I couldn't help but think of Singing in the Rain, which was a couple years before this.
Yeah.
And an unfortunate comparison because Singing in the Rain is like
it's on a
the
pedestal.
Best musical and one of the best films ever. But there were a couple things about White Christmas that I could see they were trying to mimic that success. And I don't know enough about like this era of Hollywood musicals to know what were the tropes, like the idea of like, these two guys who are best friends and are trying to make it in show business. Like that felt very, there was a whole montage of them like performing and stuff that felt so close to Singing in the Rain that I was like, this has to be ripping that off, right? Like when they're dancing on stage and doing. Now, these guys have more success. Like they have a very successful variety show or whatever. And that's the difference between them and the Singing Into the Rain guys, who are more like, it's kind of a joke montage of like, this is how we got started and nobody liked them. But I just got that vibe there. So then from that point on, I was just thinking of Singing in the Rain. And I was like, well, why does Singing in the Rain work so much better than this movie?
Oh, man.
And so it just like it just spiraled and went downhill from there.
Yeah, I could see the wheels turning and I was like, oh,
well,
no.
Ultimately, what it comes down to, and I kind of understand in some way, like I can see this as a movie that maybe like kids watched with their parents and maybe have some affection for like the nostalgia factor. But for me, not knowing much about it, my first thought was like, oh, I was completely wrong with my predictions, which I already knew.
Right.
But I didn't know it had anything to do with World War II. So right. When the movie opened on World War II, I was like, wait, is this a war movie? Oh my gosh. And then there's like it felt like 15 minutes was devoted to this like performance at the army, this general retiring. And then there are these explosions going off. And I was like, is this a war? Oh, it's not a war movie. Now we're in these guys are trying
we
to
flash forward.
Yeah, they have their variety show. And then it was like a love story. And then it was like, oh,
it's
but
got
now
something for
we're
everyone.
Going to Vermont. And now we're putting on a show. And now the general's back. And now it's about the general again. So I was like very just overwhelmed by like, this is like five different movies.
I think the only comment together you made was, like, why are there seven plots or something like that?
It's like a bunch of different movies, like, just crammed together. So that was hard. It was difficult to, like, latch on. And then the other thing I couldn't, that really threw me off, is how old Bing Crosby is.
And we Bing found out is he's, old.
He was, like, what, 50-something?
In his 50s, yeah.
He was in his 50s. And he's clearly supposed to be, like, the charming, mm-hmm. romantic lead. Not that he's not charming, but he's definitely in his 50s.
Yeah.
So there was an element of disconnect there where I was like, it seems like they're trying to portray him as like a young guy. He was in the army and he's up and coming. But it's like this guy, I was reading, apparently the guy who plays the general was only a few months older than him.
Really?
And he's portrayed as like, oh, he's old and retired,
yes,
and kind of washed up.
Yeah.
But Bing Crosby was not much younger. So that threw me off too.
And you pointed that out and then I couldn't unsee it.
I'm so
I was like,
sorry.
Oh, and I literally, the only thing I wrote in my notes app for the whole movie is Bing is old. That's it. It's
and
all the prep I did.
I don't want to take away anything from anybody who adores this movie or it's their favorite Christmas movie. Please, I hope this doesn't ruin anything. But frankly, those two things I think were the biggest, like that kicked off things and it was really weird. I couldn't get a grasp on what the movie was about and what its tone was. And then the other thing, frankly, was on almost every level, this movie lacked the energy or the sheer joy in its musical numbers that I think the best, most effective musicals have.
But I would say Vera Ellen is like the standout though.
Yes.
I find her mesmerizing. I see what you're saying and I do agree, but I think she's the standout. Like the best things happen when you're dancing, when she's in the pink dress. Like that's her big, like you get to see her and then her numbers are great.
Yeah, there are a couple great numbers and I agree. She's
clearly the standout.
I liked Danny Kaye, but again, I just kept thinking of Singing in the Rain and the, why can't I think of his name? I'm looking it up now. Donald O'Connor.
Okay.
That character, the guy who sings Make 'em Laugh.
Oh, yeah.
The sidekick to mm-hmm. Gene Kelly. That performance is on another level. And I could see them trying to create that same sort of dynamic between Bing Crosby and this guy. And Danny Kaye was like charming and funny enough, but like the jokes didn't land. Like it just felt like the humor was a little forced. It didn't have the same like snap or energy or cleverness of something like Singing in the Rain. And I just didn't get, not that they didn't have chemistry, but I think because Bing Crosby was so old, I couldn't latch onto the idea of these guys being like the manic, like we gotta prove ourselves.
Yeah.
So that was very tough for me. And then I just felt like the musical numbers were very, like, standard. Like, there was nothing remote. Like, the dancing, the songs themselves weren't particularly good. And then I was like, is this even a Christmas movie? Because it starts at Christmas, like with them singing White Christmas, and then it ends with the White Christmas in Vermont with the snow. Another, mm-hmm. another thing I was right about yes. was that there was no snow, yeah. and then there was snow. But like it, there. So yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. Clearly,
you're such a Grinch.
Maybe I am.
No, like, I actually agree with everything you say, but I still love this movie.
Yeah. Well, but I what think do you well, what do you love about it? Now, I'm not asking that in an accusatory yeah. sense, but like, what is it about this movie that really works for you?
It's nostalgia, honestly, I think. It just reminds me of my childhood. And yeah, I think it's nostalgia. I mean, it's interesting watching. So it had been a little bit since I watched it from, you know, literal beginning to end. And I did feel a little more critical of it, you know, like watching it in my 30s, which is, you know, versus maybe watching it fully like 5 or 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But I still liked the dance numbers. I still like the musical numbers.
A couple of them are really good. There are a couple of bigger ones that are really great. Like the ones that are staged where there is one in the middle. I can't, I can't remember the name. It's the name of a person. It starts with an M. It's Mandy. I'd rather Mandy. See a minstrel show, Mr. Bones, Mandy. When they do that whole medley, yeah. I liked that. That
Mandy's
was
good.
It was big, and there was lots of great dancing and stuff. So there is good stuff in this, but on a whole, it just felt like I didn't get the same sense of joy or excitement that I do from something like Singing in the Rain, where, I mean, Gene Kelly is just insane, and everybody in that is amazing.
Yeah.
But the numbers are like they're performing songs that have existed, like Singing in the Rain is a song that existed, and all the songs, I don't think there's an original song in the film, but the way they interpret them and the dancing, it's just like there's this high spirit and sense of like joy and fun that like this felt a little bit more, all right, and now they do the performance, okay.
But people loved this movie. It is interesting yeah. because I see all your points, and I actually think you're right. However, I don't know. It's just like my memories of it. And when a song would come on, I'm like, oh, yeah, this one. I love this one. And oh, she's so pretty. And oh, I love. So I always love Phil and Judy. Like they were like, I always thought they stood out way more than
Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which
I
is
felt
funny
that way
because
too.
Obviously the narrative puts more of an emphasis on you want Betty and Bob to get together. Will they? Won't they? But like I always thought that the two actors, especially portraying Phil and Judy were way stronger and yeah. had way more chemistry, like way more chemistry. So it's funny. I remember that as a kid and watching it, and that still definitely held true. And even more as an adult watching this, I was like, oh yeah, they're the stars, not, which is funny because Bing Crosby is like the star.
Well, Bing Crosby, but and he's really good.
He is
like,
good, yeah.
He's good. It's just the sheer dynamic of like, you are old and you are not this seems like it's supposed to be a part for like, a young performer.
And those actresses, I'm pretty sure, were in their 20s.
Yes.
So they were very young.
He's more than twice their
and
age.
And the actor, Phil, I can't remember his name, but Phil. Danny Kaye. He's not in his 50s, but I think he's in his late 40s. I don't think he's that much behind. And I do wonder what that is. Like,
I feel like
is it just
they
because
cast,
they were stars?
Well, I think I haven't read anything. I've read a little bit, but there's a surprising lack of information about this film's production. Okay, so it says White Christmas was intended to reunite Crosby and Fred Astaire for their third Irving Berlin showcase musical, which was this. They were in Holiday Inn together, and it looks like Astaire declined the project after reading the script.
Oh, boy.
Which doesn't surprise me. I do know there were some, like, significant script issues when they were producing the film and trying to make it. There was a lot of stuff where they felt the script needed a rewriting. It was a torturous 8 weeks of rewriting, quote unquote. And Mel Frank, who I think was one of the screenwriters. Yeah, Melvin Frank. He basically said it was like one of the worst experiences of his life writing this script.
Oh gosh.
And that starts to make sense when you start to, again, what I'm saying is like, it feels like a hodgepodge. Like they just like were throwing everything into it, trying to figure out. But the problem is they never figured it out and they just left everything in it. And it's a long movie.
It's
2 hours.
Yeah.
And it feels every bit, you know, this is unrelated, but we just watched The Fellowship of the Ring, the theatrical version. And I was saying like, that movie flies by.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, there are movies that are significantly shorter than Fellowship of the Ring that feel longer. White Christmas feels longer than The Lord of the Rings, like each one of those. Like, it just felt like, I feel really bad. It's a Christmas movie and this is our Christmas episode and I am feeling the airwaves and the internet with sheer grinchery. But it definitely, I want to have, like, as a Christmas movie, when I think of my favorite Christmas movies, you do want that sense of joy and fun and humor. And there is I thought the story of the general, them putting on a show for the general, was really touching.
Yeah.
I think you could have lost the opening completely and still gotten the sense of, like, these guys are, like, they were in the army and maybe they hear about the general. Tie that in a little bit more to tighten up the story. Have the focus be the general and have the focus be they go to Vermont.
They could have just met them on the train.
Felt like it was very, you could have met them on the train, get rid of that opening act, really. Like, they could just be, you could have a,
although you get the sisters act,
the sisters with the act,
two, yeah, but with the two men.
Yes, that which was funny.
That's one of my
and
favorite
I,
parts.
I actually had to look it up because I was like, is this Some Like It Hot? But Some Like It Hot, yeah, came out after.
Oh, okay,
this.
Yeah.
So this movie did not rip that off, but I did like that. I thought
me
that
too
was funny. The movie has moments that I like, but I thought the general, that was like the most touching element of,
yes,
the movie.
Yeah,
and the only element that really worked, that I was just, again, I was just starting to think about, how could you just, it's a 2-hour long movie, cut out the first 10 minutes of them at war. You don't really need to know that. That can be told in dialogue. Like, why are you guys bonded? Oh, well, I saved his life in the war and I hurt my arm in the process, so now he owes me. It's like, we didn't need to see him hurt his arm. We didn't even really need to see the general. We could have gotten all that information through the characters in the story actively happening.
I want to see the Sean Eastridge cut of this film.
Well, I think the hotel is really where that's where the bulk of this movie should take place. Because then, you know, when they get to Vermont, it feels more Christmassy. Because there's a whole chunk of the movie where they're in Hawaii or some tropical place where it's like, there were two or three dance numbers where I was like, what does this have to do with Christmas?
With the lighthouse and stuff.
And there isn't really an element of, like, Christmas to it until the very end, and it's almost like an afterthought. Like, it's like, oh yeah, it's a variety show and it happens to be Christmas, so we'll put that on. So it's like, I'm thinking the whole time, I was like, I want, you know, with a Christmas movie, you want it to evoke that sense of joy and fun and excitement, and at least a good chunk of this movie is not at all related to Christmas. And then just for a musical, you need to have song and dance numbers that are really shining. And for me, I was like, this feels like a variety show where, like, people put in on for, like, made for television, where people were just kind of like, all right. I do feel bad about it, but I,
no, you shouldn't. It's your opinion.
I just feel like the energy wasn't quite where I wanted it to be.
Yeah, I see that.
But what do you, in terms of things that, besides Danny Kaye and that relationship, are there other things you really like about it? There were a couple. I noticed that, what's her name? There's the woman from Sister Act who plays. I can't remember the nun, but she is. I think it's, yeah, it's Emma Allen, the character. It's Mary Wickles or Wicks. Mary Wicks. She plays. She says she often played supporting roles as prim, professional women, secretaries, nurses, nuns, and housekeepers.
Oh my
gosh! She was a nun in Sister
Act.
What
a typecast.
But she was in it, and then one of the guys from West Side Story was in the movie.
Yeah, you were finding all the
when
cameos.
Because I was getting bored with the movie, I started just recognizing people and being like, oh my God, is that person in West Side Story? And then being right about it, which was just crazy. But I'm trying to remember who he plays in West Side Story. That's right, George Chakiris. He has a bit part, like, in one of the big dance numbers in White Christmas. But what are the things, like, other things that work for you about it?
I mean, most of the dance numbers and singing numbers work for me still.
Like.
Yep. No, but it's interesting because those are the things I always really liked. And the plot was kind of like, okay, this is fine, you know. But as a young girl, I think I love singing and dancing and costumes and just that kind of energy. And so that still worked for me. But I will say this experience and being hyper aware that you were not into it made me feel a little more critical. And if I were to put on my critic lens, Yeah, it's probably not a great movie. However, I still enjoyed it because of the nostalgia factor. Yes. Because I've been watching it for years and years and years, and it's ingrained. It's just the Christmas movie, and it's the spectacle. And as a young girl, I loved that so much, and I loved musicals. And but, you know, yeah, watching it a little older with a little more of a critical eye, I was like, okay, there's a lot that doesn't work. There's a lot that doesn't work here. But I still enjoyed it for what it was, and I do agree about their runtime. I didn't remember it feeling so long. Yes. It definitely felt its length, which is unfortunate because with a musical, you typically, if it's a good musical, you don't feel the length because it's just zipping into the next number and it's fast paced. This didn't really feel fast paced or have any sense of urgency. Oh no, I'm turning into you. I'm supposed to be the like, I love it.
Well, I think I think for me, the biggest comparison is Singing in the Rain, the Good Morning sequence, that whole dance number. Now compare that to the snow sequence in this film, the song Snow. They're sitting in a train car, like at a table, singing the song. That I remember watching that and being like, this is the best example of why I'm not into this. It's like nobody's dancing, nobody seems particularly excited, and the setting is about as dull as can be. They're sitting in a train. I get like they're on a train and what else can they do, but it's like, it's a musical. They can get up and dance across the tables. They can do somersaults in the aisles. Everyone in the seats can get excited and dance with them and sing about snow. So I just, that to me was like the epitome of like, this is it. And I guess it just has to be the fact that Bing Crosby was the center around which the movie was built. And when Bing Crosby is 50 something years old and can't be Gene Kelly, then you have to cast an actor apart from him who can match kind of like, bring the youthful energy, but not be too old. He's kind of the connection to the girls who are in their 20s.
Yeah.
So I see how it kind of all revolved around him. But I think Bing Crosby is good in the movie, is what's weird about it. Like, I haven't seen him perform in anything else that I know of. And I thought he was really good. Like, as a star, he definitely exhibits star power. He's charming. He's a good actor. So it's why I feel kind of bad, but it's like, it does feel like you were too old, and if they had aged this character down maybe 20 years, this could have been, that energy that this lacks.
And I never noticed that when I was younger. Maybe it's because I was younger and everyone was old. When you're a kid, like everyone's like, if you're 10, everyone you see on screen is 50 in your brain, whether they're 20 or 50, you know, unless they're like white haired, you're just kind of like, eh. And he, you know, for 50, he doesn't look, he's not a bad 50.
No.
You know, not at all. He didn't look like geriatric or anything. I mean, he could still move. He still had those big blue eyes and those cute ears.
So I think so the stuff I really liked was at the end with the variety show with the general and the really sweet like, oh, let's put on the thing for the general. I kind of didn't love the there's something really annoying about the I misheard you and now I'm angry at you subplot.
Yeah, where she heard half of the phone conversation,
which is something I feel like happens,
very tropey.
Well, it's very Hallmark, which I unfortunately have caught my fair share of Hallmark films, thanks to your love of them, particularly the Christmas ones. There is that constant trope of, I misheard something, or I accepted a job somewhere else.
30 minutes before the end of the movie, you have to throw a wrench.
You have to have this thing where the love story is thrown out. So I think that was in the back of my mind of like, oh my God, this. And it always bugs me because it's just like, what happens is one guy says something, or it, like the information is misconstrued. Either the guy or the girl is upset. Like, oh, I'm so upset with them. They think this, and it's not at all what was actually said.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of saying, oh, no, let me tell you what happened, both parties just act stupid.
So yeah, Bing and
Crosby
like
is like, why are you mad at me?
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't have to explain a thing. You know exactly why. And she leaves. She doesn't even say that. It's just a constant level of like, I'm annoyed at you. He doesn't know why she's annoyed. So I was annoyed. I was just annoyed with that trope. So that didn't really work for me, but I did like that, like, oh, she comes back on stage and they all perform together.
They
all fall in love. They all get engaged. Yep. And but I think the successful version of this movie is the one that focuses on the general, like the kind of broken down in his luck, my hotel's running out of money and I'm going bankrupt. That story is.
And he was
part
rejected from the army trying to rejoin, which
he tried
is
to rejoin
very
the
sad.
Army. He just feels useless.
Yeah.
I love the idea of at the core of this, and you do it around Christmas time, mm-hmm. and these two guys, you know, go to Vermont because they fell in love with these girls, and they chase them to Vermont, and they're like, our old general. Oh, but he's down on his luck. Well, we can put on a show. We can do a fundraiser. That, to me, that's the heart of this movie. Lose everything else, and suddenly you have this very focused, very affecting, moving...
Hour and 38 minutes.
And unfortunately, you also need to recast Bing Crosby. He's too old for me to buy into the, like...
Or make everyone else... We have to help
out our superior officer.
Or make everyone else older.
Make everyone else older, yeah. That's
make,
a good
make bet. The actresses in their mid-30s, late 30s.
Yeah.
The general, age him 5 years.
Yeah.
That I think that would have been just fine. Because really, most generals, they are probably retiring at 50, 60, right? I would think.
Yeah, well, that guy, I think he was old enough. It's just, you know, Bing Crosby is too old to pull off that idea of like the youthful.
Bing is old, my only Bing note. Is old.
But he's great. But he's also, again, he's really great. So I get like...
Yeah.
There are things that you have to kind of just, if you love the movie, you just are like, it's cool. I love it because Bing Crosby's.
Yeah. I think I definitely make a lot of excuses for this film, but like openly. It's like, it's fine. Yeah. You know, I still like it. It's flawed for sure. But I don't know. I just watching it, it just brings me back.
There's a sweetness to it.
It's that sugary sweetness, but I bought it. You know, I like it. And, I like the core actors a lot. I think the females especially are wonderful. But yeah, I don't, you know, thanks for ruining Christmas.
Can we end this on a happier Christmassy note?
I think we should turn this into a drinking game. So anytime Sean said singing in the rain, you have to take a shot.
Go back and re-listen.
I think we're at like 8 or 9 at this point.
So that by the end of this episode, you will be filled with Christmas cheer and joy and happiness. And
are you glad you watched it?
I am glad I've seen it.
Yeah.
Again, it's not a bad movie.
Right.
It is something I can totally see people like, all right, let's sit down and let's watch it together.
Yeah.
Like it does have that kind of feel to it. For me personally, get a shot ready. Thinking of it in comparison to Singing in the Rain because I couldn't help it. I was just constantly thinking of like Moses supposes. Like just like the sheer like... The joy, creativity, and sense of just every joke lands. So it just, I kept thinking about this in comparison to that. And maybe that was my problem. Singing in the Rain is a very high bar. It's like saying,
it's
like, well,
the
movie was Citizen Kane. So therefore, you know, so it's like, it's a hard, it's not fair necessarily. But the movie almost invites comparisons by some of the subplots and the way it kind of.
And how close were the two?
2 years apart.
Oh, wow. So they really were
it's
like...
really the... It's the Bing Crosby and Danny Key. Is that it? Danny Kay relationship.
Okay.
That I was like, this feels very Singing in the Rain. So once that... Once I latched onto
that, it was
that,
just
it's
in
all
your brain.
I could think about.
Yeah, I get
and,
that.
And so that definitely held it back for me. But it's not like... It's not a bad movie, but also I question, aside from the title and the moment at the end... when they sing and it's snowing and it's very Christmassy, there's also a whole chunk of the movie where I'm like, is this a Christmas movie? You could also make the same argument for It's a Wonderful Life, which frankly has much to do with Christmas until the very end, as well. So to be fair, that argument can be turned against me and you could be like, well, It's a Wonderful Life doesn't really have anything to do with Christmas.
Well,
until-
and that's a film where whenever I rewatch it, I'm like, oh, there's a lot. It's a long movie.
There's a
whole movie within a movie.
A movie
film.
I like more, but I do think has some similar flaws to White Christmas, where I think it's too long and a good chunk of It's a Wonderful Life.
It does
I
have the two-plot problem a bit.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a Wonderful Life. What's interesting about that movie, similar to White Christmas, where I would say hone in and focus on the hotel as your main story, It's a Wonderful Life, when people think about that movie, they only think about the ending with Clarence.
Yes.
And
that's the last 30 minutes.
It's the last 30 minutes of the movie. Or another Home Alone is another good example. Just let's bring it up. I'm trying to to argue my own argument to make everybody feel better who loves this movie. Home Alone is a film where when you think about it, you think of the burglars and Kevin making all the traps. That, watching that as an adult, that's a film I grew up with and I can't form an objective opinion about because I have such a fondness for that film, probably similar to you with White Christmas or maybe people in
I think
our audience.
So.
But the burglar stuff does not fit in the context of what Home Alone is trying to do and also like turns it into a like a cartoon.
Yeah, a little slapsticky.
Yes, and Home Alone 2 is so much worse as far as...
They put way more emphasis on 2. Yeah, or
so,
that.
So, but that's all to say, there is an interesting thing with some Christmas movies where like... There's that element of like, I think the movie's about this, and you watch it and you realize, oh, there's like a good hour and a half where it's not about the thing I think as the central premise of the film. White Christmas falls into that category, so maybe it is a perfect Christmas movie.
Maybe that's the key to success.
Yeah.
We're thinking about it all wrong.
We're thinking about it all wrong. It has to be, there has to be, just at least if you touch on Christmas, even if it's only for a couple minutes, it's a Christmas movie.
I wonder if our future kids will like want to watch White Christmas.
Yeah, I this is...
Because I was enamored by this film, like really. And I don't know if it's because I was a little girl and I love singing and dancing and dressing up. So that appealed to me as a kid.
I don't think I would have liked it as a kid.
Yeah.
It's just too slow. But to be fair, I don't think I liked Singing in the Rain as a kid. Like I watched that as a kid and was just kind of like not... Again, for me, it was like, is there a lightsaber? No. Is there Superman? No. Okay, I don't like it.
Yeah.
So it was just, that was my mindset as a kid. But getting older, the energy of something like Singing in the Rain, or even West Side Story, just to stop talking about Singing in the Rain, West Side Story has this just like, it's well made. It's great. And that's another random thing too. Michael Curtis directed White Christmas. He directed Casablanca.
Which I had no idea about.
I had no idea
That's
either.
Crazy.
And I know Michael Curtis was kind of... This is the era of film where directors were for hire. It wasn't like you hired a director because of their vision. You hired them because they were reliable. It was more like what television, like a show that's more like something like Law and Order or something where it's like you bring in the director not to put their personal stamp on it, but to just continue the vibe of this episodic television show. That's what directors were. So he was kind of that for... this period in time. But at the same time, he made films that have become like Casablanca, examples of the finest craftsmanship. You know, it's an amazing film. White Christmas 2, to a certain extent, has elements of that like, oh yeah, this is, it's a classic. Some people love it. But I thought that was fascinating too, because I don't see the director of Casablanca in this movie at all.
Yeah, I don't either. And I didn't know that. So it's really interesting. I just miss musicals.
Huh. Yeah,
that's what I feel after watching this movie.
Really,
I'm like,
good Christmas musical in a while.
We don't get
or
musicals
ever.
In general.
Yeah,
I mean,
La
we
La
have,
Land.
Yes, La La Land was, and what was the artist? I didn't see it. Was
the artist,
artist
was
a musical?
Kind of a, it was a
well,
silent
it was silent.
Film,
a silent musical.
Dance numbers.
That's
like,
what
very,
I thought.
In that,
but really, we don't get too much other than the live performances.
Les Mis, The Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman, I did enjoy a lot.
Yeah.
I have a big soft spot.
It came out at Christmas.
I believe so.
Yeah.
But well, I just miss, I don't know. I just want to, I could just rewatch like Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy movies all day long.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do. That is what this movie has made me want to go do. Watch something
well,
else.
Well, what else? How do we feel? You want to do final ratings?
Yeah, let's do
What's
it.
What's our final rating system? I thought of like something.
Bings.
Yeah.
Bings.
I was going to say old Bings, but
no,
I feel bad about
can't.
That. What's like your favorite dance number in the movie?
The best things happen when you're dancing.
The best things happen when you're dancing. So how many best things happening when you're dancing is, would you give White Christmas?
I would go with 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to do 2.5. So yeah, I'll say it right down the middle for me.
2.5.
There are glimmers.
The best things happen.
There
are
glimmers
dancing.
Of things where I could see like, oh yes, I understand why people would love this, but it wasn't up to par with what I wanted, which is I wanted Singing in the Rain. I wanted to be watching Singing in the Rain.
The Maybe audience is Singing really drunk right now.
Well, I'm sorry we ruined your Christmas, everybody. Maybe next year we'll pick another Christmas movie. That's,
is this my fault?
No, this isn't your fault. This is a good choice because I wanted to see it and I'm glad I saw it.
Well, it's interesting because I've kind of changed my mind a smidge.
A smidge.
Not a ton, but a smidge.
You still love it, though.
Like, I still love it, but I now see the problems with it.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Merry
Thank
Christmas
you so
to you.
Much.
Well, if you hate me, and I'm sure you do, you can yell at me on Twitter at @YeSeanDoorman. I am there. I am ready to receive all the ire and the anger. Mostly, I'm sure John Mills is just waiting to yell at me. So, John, feel free to yell at me there. And other than that, again, make sure to check out the Nerd Party at thenerdparty.com. We thank you for listening. We hope this hasn't ruined your Christmas too much. But Sarah, thank you again. It's always, regardless of how I feel about the movie, it's always a pleasure to talk with you
about the movie. You suck up.
Merry Christmas to everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year. And we will see you in 2021. Where the tree tops glisten and chill.